have to score the first three rounds.
Okay, Jim.
Look at the stare of the champion against the challenger. The irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
Puts a left hook again. Jackson to Smith. He's on roller skates and he comes back down. Oh, and down goes Smith. What a knockout. Mamma mia.
This is InTheFight.net's In The Fight show on Sportinarium Radio. Talking MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing. Follow the show on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at ITF Show. And now from Philadelphia, Doc, Brett, In The Fight.
Oh my God!
It's Wednesday night, and you know what that means. If you don't, you do now. This is In The Fight show on Sportinarium Radio. Our move to Wednesdays is official. I am the Doc, joined as always by Brett. Let's get some particulars out of the way before we get started. We are presented by Michael's Glass Company, serving the Philadelphia tri-state area since 1978. 215-338-3293. Tell them that we sent you. If you are in the Philadelphia tri-state area, head over to Ardmore, the Paul's Table, a modern Italian steakhouse, thepaulstable.com for reservations and merch. Buy some t-shirts, people. TKO Store, TEEKOstore.com. Brett, I got to tell you, I was moving some furniture this past weekend, and a couch slipped right in the leg. Thought I had a Conor McGregor. Turned out okay.
Well, most importantly, glad you're okay. At least the bone didn't go through the skin. That would have been nasty. Earlier in the night, we saw a skull. Glad we didn't see a bone in the main event.
This is true. We're going to get into UFC. We're going to break down UFC 264 in a three-up, three-down power ranking format. But we got to talk Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier right off the go. I know it's going to funnel into what we're going to talk about in a few seconds. But the thrill of the fight and the agony of how it ended, I guess, is the way to put it. So I texted you. I was like, what the hell, man? Like, it was
anticlimactic. I guess that's the best way to put it. It was an entertaining fight. There were ebbs and flows. I scored the first round for Dustin Poirier 10-9. You know, one thing I want to get to, and I think I texted you this. So they came out with the official scorecard of that first round. And two of the judges had it 10-8. Well, my thinking is the last 5 seconds of the round, Donner. There's no one named Donner, but there is someone named Connor. Connor falls backwards because his leg his bone is broken in his leg, and Dustin's on top of him, and it looks like he might finish it. I think that last 5 second sequence had a big part in those two judges scoring it 10-8. So for the people who say it was a gigantic blowout, I don't think it was a blowout of a first round. I think Dustin definitely had his moments. I don't know if he ever could have finished him in the first round, but the last 5 seconds, it was sort of a false narrative of the first round because of the fact that he was falling back on a broken leg. It wasn't. Because remember, they both come in with a right hand, and actually both of them miss. When he steps back, then the leg completely goes. So to me, I think it's, you know, for people saying, look, it was a 10-8 round. The judges will never comment on why they scored a 10-8. So that to me is one thing that I think is just leaves so many open, unanswered questions about the fight. And it was a very entertaining first round.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was entertaining, and it is a little bit disingenuous to call it a 10-8 round because of how it ended. Just, and they didn't know it, right? They don't know. You don't know what happens at the time as a judge. You're watching it. It was interesting, that level of hate for Conor McGregor. This guy has gone from face to heel. And I guess I didn't really pay too much attention to it. I'm a fan of him. I it's a shtick. I get it. Yeah. It sells tickets. But he went from the man you wanted to see win fights to the guy you wanted to see get his ass kicked. And It is the level of hatred was amazing. At the same time, kudos to Conor McGregor. Number one, I'm going to tell anyone, go follow Boss Rutten, you know, El Wapo. He had a great, and we've shared it on our Facebook at facebook.com/ITF show, at ITF show on all social. He gave a really lengthy explanation as to what he thought happened as far as the checking of the kick, yeah, and breaking of the ankle, and this, the injury actually occurred early on, and it was just happened to be snap, crackle, pop when McGregor steps back. But McGregor talking shit from the ground with an ankle that's turned Sid Vicious one in a different direction, man knows how to sell. He knows how to sell fights.
He does. So you raised two excellent points. The first one, which I, in a way, kind of became very funny. So as you mentioned, Boss did a tremendous job of breaking down. There was a leg kick earlier in the round, because as all of you who have seen the fight this past Saturday recall, Conor came out, you know, guns blazing, but using kicks, implementing kicks. It wasn't a boxing heavy approach. It was a kickboxing approach. So Boss references this one kick where you could see his muscle is relaxed and the leg kind of wrapped around Dustin's shin, or excuse me, his thigh. But what I find funny is, so that is what Boss believes. I believe that's also what famous kickboxing champion John Wayne Parr believes. But the amount of analysis going into the tape, it looks like people are breaking it down like it's the Zapruder film from the JFK assassination. So John Kavanaugh, Connor's coach, mentioned he had an ankle injury earlier in the camp, which probably left it compromised going into it. Then I believe someone's mother, I swear to you, I forget exactly whose mother, and when we remember, we will post it on social media, again, at ITF show. Someone's mother was watching the fight. Before, as I mentioned, the last 5 seconds, both Conor and Dustin go in, I believe for right hands. Right before them, Conor goes for a front teep kick. And when he does it, it doesn't connect with Dustin's chest, and Dustin, it hits Dustin's elbow. And when you see Connor's foot go back, his foot is lame. He can't put weight on it. And that's when he quickly adjusts to go in for this punch. So, I mean, literally the theories as to when Connor actually broke the foot, it's amazing. It's literally like the magic bullet theory. And then the second thing that you mentioned, you're going from how people used to love him, people now hating him. One thing to keep into account is there was not as many Irish fans in the building because I don't think they could travel. So it definitely changed the dynamic a little bit. But also, and this was the lead up of the fight, it was Conor in the sense that he was angry, he was talking shit. It was the worst of his shit talking of all time. It didn't make sense. He didn't create a narrative that made sense to me as to why he hated Dustin Poirier, other than the fact that Dustin Poirier knocked him out. And then literally from the ground, yes, he is selling the fight, but there's other videos now when Dustin had his hand raised. Conor is saying that Dustin holding pointing the gun at his head or something, saying, "You and your wife are going to get it tonight." Literally saying like he's going to murder them. It's like he's gone overboard. I thought he was going overboard pre-fight to psych himself up. It's just, there's just so many different angles from 5 minutes of fighting to, you know, discuss. It's unbelievable.
Let's get into the three up, three down of UFC 264, because that'll kind of tell us where we're going to go after this thing. So yeah, Let's start. This is your 303 down power rankings. Now, it doesn't have to be a person. It's a person, place, it's a thing. It's whatever we want it to be. So trending upwards, three trending upwards after UFC 264, run them down.
So to me, the number one winner of the weekend is the UFC. So they left the weekend having one of their biggest ever pay-per-views. The graphics were tremendous. The coverage was tremendous. You know, normally in a pay-per-view, they'll have either Megan O'Leary or Laura Sanko in the back. They had both of them. They were doing a great job. Whether you liked them or not, you had Stephen A. Smith. You had Max Kellerman. The sporting world stopped. and all eyes were focused on the UFC. That's a win. On top of it, you left the evening with Dustin Poirier looking even more legit and Conor McGregor having lost, but only as a technicality. Conor McGregor now is energized and enthused about being a fighter in the UFC, and he has something to go after. He has a reason to come back. So for that reason, UFC wins.
UFC wins on in the books, too. Sportico, it came out earlier that UFC 264 drew 1.3 million domestic buys. So that is through ESPN Plus. And as of press time, as of us on the air time, 500,000 worldwide. I mean, that could easily go up. You're looking at 1.8 million pay-per-view buys for this event. That's a huge, huge number. I factor in maybe it goes up a little bit more. You're approaching 2 million buys on this.
Yeah. So I guess in one way, they might be a little bit disappointed because it didn't break the Conor Khabib. But now, again, there's a reason for Conor to come back. Now, you know, there's going to be a lot of questions as to how you book Dustin and Conor moving forward. But you know that all eyes are going to watch Conor come back. Can he come back? You know, I believe most likely Dustin would have won that fight, but I can't definitively say yes. And in this sport, the great thing about mixed martial arts, like most combat sports, typically there is a definitive answer. We didn't get that Saturday night, and that's why it needs to happen for a fourth time. And that just equals money for the UFC.
It absolutely does equal money for the UFC. And I was posting memes, pictures of Ric Flair throwing up the four for the four horsemen. Dana White, he kind of poo-pooed it a little bit. Yeah, maybe there is going to be a fourth fight. Come on, man. Like, you know, how we get there, I don't know how we're going to get there. And we can analyze that at length. But we're going to have a fourth fight. It's a money fight. It's going to be huge. It might be for a belt. Who knows?
Exactly. But the great thing is you have Conor McGregor wanting to fight. So you have this huge end because technically he lost, but in a technicality kind of way. He didn't lose all of the shine that he would have lost had he been soundly defeated. So therefore, you still have a very hot commodity moving forward and an energized and enthused commodity. Granted, right now with probably a metal rod in his foot, but you know, he can get past. If Alex Smith can play football again, Conor McGregor can fight again.
Alex Smith, football.
Yes.
Not a segue by your part, as we got to get to the rest of our three up and three down, but a good enough time to announce, as we have on our social media, we host a football show as well, the Goal Line Stand. All football all the time at GL Stand Show. It is a Sports Talk Philly partner. We are all over the place. We are coming to Sportinarium Radio September 3rd with our season preview episode. Every football Friday, the fans in the UK are going to hear us. They're going to hear awesome audio clips such as this one.
From the 12, Jones keeps, gets a block, takes off, and he is gone. Trying to stay upright, and he trips. Absolutely all alone, and he
That is Danny Dimes breaking a big run, a giant Danny Dimes. Brett is a Giants fan. I'm an Eagles fan. Breaking a big run and falling down, not scoring a touchdown. I drop that audio all the time just to see Brett's reaction. Now you on Sportinarium will get to hear it all the time as well. We're looking forward to it. September 3rd, we're kicking off the season, previewing the NFL. We're happy to be with Sports Talk Philly. We're happy to be with Sportinarium. Just figure we get that out there.
Yeah, being that you're, in your spare time, one of your many talents is that you're a football official, I'm calling a flag on the play for unsportsmanlike conduct. Yeah.
Suck it up, Buttercup. Who else is trending upwards at you coming out of UFC 264?
So typically I would not have the loser and recipient of the most ever significant strikes in a bantamweight fight being a winner. But Chris Moutinho, who fought Sean O'Malley on short notice to open up the pay-per-view card, he is undoubtedly a winner. So, again, he took the fight on short notice against Sean O'Malley, replacing Luis Smolka, and showed the kind of heart that, you know, we sort of associate with Rocky. The guy literally came out right away. You could tell he was athletically and from a skill perspective outmatched, but it didn't matter. He kept coming forward, absorbing shot after shot after shot, and even landed his own. And he was getting Sean O'Malley tired. And, you know, it literally took Herb Dean to come in and rescue him with about 30 seconds left because he was taking so many shots. He was fine afterwards in the sense that he was talking, he was aware. I agreed with the stoppage. Frankly, you could have stopped the fight around earlier, as Dana White pointed out, but to show that much heart, that much grit, you know, a lot of guys when they first fight in the octagon, they talk about octagon jitters. Not for this guy. Came forward against a top prospect and just had so much heart. It was really an inspiring performance. And he obviously is going to earn a contract with the UFC. So shout outs to Chris Moutinho, number two.
Who is trending up number three?
Number three, man, I'll tell you, the last few months for all of you that have been listening, we keep talking about all of these top Georgian prospects, Merab Dvalishvili, Giga Chikadze, and Saturday night, there's another one that we need to follow, and that's Ilya Topuria, who's all of 24 years old, knocked out, finished Ryan Hall in the first round. Ryan Hall, they're both featherweights. Ryan Hall is one of the greatest grapplers and submission artists in the UFC, in all of mixed martial arts, and it's literally his career, no one ever wants to fight him because he is so awkward in his fighting, always going for leg locks and things of that nature. And Ilya Topuria volunteered for it, said, yeah, I'll fight him, no problem. He's a black belt himself, also a master of sport in combo, in sambo. And he looked tremendous, knocking him out. Physical, athletic, skillful. This kid is going to be a top contender very soon. So Ilya Topuria shining under the bright lights.
We got trending up. Therefore, we have to have trending down. Who do we have trending down?
Trending down, unfortunately, you know, obviously we all know that Jorge Masvidal has the UFC's BMF belt, but the untitled NMF for the nicest motherfucker is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson of the welterweight division. Unfortunately, he's my number one trending down. Lost the co-main event to Gilbert Burns, and in doing so, the 38-year-old, it appears, lost his final chance to get back into title contention. Great guy, tremendous fighter. You know, obviously, he was just unable to create enough distance. Gilbert Burns was able to smother him at opportune moments, take him down. It was not the most exciting fight, but nevertheless, Gilbert Burns did what he had to do. Survived, and you got to survive in advance. And he got past Wonder Boy, and unfortunately, it looks like Wonder Boy just is not ever going to have an opportunity to fight for the belt. He had two chances against Tyron Woodley, couldn't make it happen. Was lost. One was a majority draw, then lost a razor thin decision. You know, he could still fight, but you know, obviously, that window is now closed.
Who's your number two trending in the negative direction?
So my number two is actually the top contenders in the UFC lightweight division. So while I think this was a huge win for the UFC, the fact now that Conor is still around and we don't know yet how Conor and Dustin are going to be booked moving forward, there very well could be an instance in which I think, because Conor's going to be out for an extended period of time, I think that at first I would give Dana said the winner of this fight gets to fight Charles Oliveira for the UFC lightweight championship. So what I would do is I would say, look, Dustin won. You give him Charles Oliveira. Dustin has more shine on him now. You give him the belt. The thing is, what happens then? He wins, and suddenly here you have a healthy Connor who's following him everywhere at every event. And excuse me, he's calling out Connor and calling out Dustin. At some point, Connor is going to skip the line. So a guy like a Justin Gaethje, a Beneil Dariush, as you would like to say, or maybe a Michael Chandler, someone, I think someone is going to get screwed, and Connor's going to jump the line. So while the UFC won, if I'm a UFC lightweight contender right now, unless you're going to get the fight with Connor, so you're going to get the money fight, I think at some point you might get screwed over for 6 months.
Yeah, well, look, that's business. I mean, yeah. When you have name value, we were talking stadium shows, right? This is potential for Allegiant Stadium.
Yeah.
A Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, four. It's a huge opportunity. It's going to happen. If you throw a title into the situation, it just makes sense. It does suck for everybody else, but look, that's what sells, man. It's about selling tickets, unfortunately.
Or yeah,
however you want to look at it.
Absolutely. But from a meritocracy standpoint, while Connor is a great fighter and while Dustin only beat him this time via doctor stoppage, it definitely is going to suck if you are one of those guys who we don't know yet who in 6 months from now is going to be the true number one contender. I would put money on Justin Gaethje, because I think Gaethje and Michael Chandler are going to fight, and I think Gaethje will come out victorious. But nevertheless, while the UFC is winning, the lightweight contenders might be losing a little bit.
And you're number three in the trending negative direction.
My number three is Tai Tuivasa. Now, first off, credit to Tai Tuivasa, defeated Greg Hardy in a very entertaining 1 minute or 67 second affair. Greg Hardy, who
everybody that's a fan in the National Football Conference Eastern Division, other than the scumbag Cowboy fans, were so excited for this whole thing.
I would say that any NFL fan or anyone who's ever followed football.
Yeah, but particularly Eagles fans, Giants fans, and those idiots down in Washington.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the politicians. I'm talking about the football ownership and football fans.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So for that point, you might want to call him a winner. But as we all know, Tai Tuivasa is known for doing the shoey, which apparently in his corner of the world is you take someone's shoe. Apparently, traditionally, it also involves them spitting in the shoe. You then pour beer in said shoe and drink the beer out of the shoe. Although, I don't know, Mike, if you saw this, when he was walking into the back, he was doing a bunch of shoeys, and someone put the beer in, and before Tai Tuivasa took the shoe, the guy had Dustin Poirier's hot sauce, and he poured, like, the whole thing in there, and Tai Tuivasa did not like that. So he had a hot sauce shoey. So for that, you know what? You lost. Power ranking down. You're three down.
Shame on that fan for ruining a good beer. I mean, it's already getting ruined going into a shoe.
You wasted your beer. You ruined your shoe. And if you think about it, that's like almost the equivalent of like slipping someone a roofie.
I don't know about that, but you know.
Tai Tuivasa agreed to drink a beer from your shoe. He didn't sign up for the
hot sauce. Hot sauce.
Who does? Which, by the way, Poirier hot sauce is very good.
I have not had it.
Very good.
I might give it a go on some stuff when I'm smoking it. You know, smoked meats. We'll see. But fair enough. All right. So recap. Who are your three? Who do you have trending upwards?
Okay, trending upwards. We have the UFC, Chris Moutinho, and Ilia Topuria.
And trending in the negative direction?
Steven Wonderboy Thompson, UFC lightweight contenders, and Tai Tuivasa.
Tai Tuivasa, all because you got spiked with some hot sauce. That's a shame.
He got slipped. Instead of getting, slipped a Mickey, he got slipped a Poirier hot sauce.
That's awful. It's just it's disgusting. It's not his fault. I don't know that he should be there. Before we move on, before we move on, go buy some merch. TKO Store, TEEKOstore.com. Click on other organizations. You can find our shirts there. We are actually going to put out it's called Linktree, which all of our links to our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram, all that kind of fun stuff in theflight.net. And you can buy a shirt, help support us. Yeah, that would be, we would be appreciative of that. We're going to have a giveaway soon. I was talking with the guys over at TKO Store. We're going to have a giveaway of some of our merch, some other fighters' merches, some other fighters' merch. I specifically requested Tim the Maniac Sylvia's shirt to give away. We'll see what happens there. I don't
know. Nice.
It's an interesting story that was coming out. Let's talk about this. This is bizarre. Ariel Helwani went on the Dan Le Batard show and discussed what was going on with the UFC during his time with ESPN. So it was essentially like ESPN was treating him like Rocky in Rocky IV when they had all the KGB dudes following him around.
Yeah, pretty much. So as most people know, Ariel Helwani is one of, if not the most famous MMA journalist. And he and Dana White have always have had a very rocky relationship. The apex of that was at UFC 199 when Ariel Helwani was the first one to break the news before the UFC that the UFC had signed Brock Lesnar for one fight at UFC 200. And they literally kicked Ariel Helwani along with the photographer and videographer out of the building. And then they banned him from all future events. There was this huge uproar, and then they brought him back. Then he signs with ESPN. And before he even appears on ESPN, the UFC signs a deal with the ESPN. And then ESPN becomes the exclusive home for the UFC. So now Dana White is in a position where he could really fuck with with Ariel Helwani. And so apparently he was trying to get him fired. And whenever Dana White would show up at a building, Ariel Helwani had to be escorted out of said building 30 minutes prior. It's really, I'm not a huge Ariel Helwani guy, but nevertheless, that's it's unfortunate that Dana White has such bad feelings towards one guy and has such control over, you know, the industry, and there's never any clapback, right? There's never anything towards Dana White. Look, there's other journalists that this has happened to. I mean, all of Sherdog has essentially been banned. Josh Gross, Loretta Hunt, there's some tremendous journalists that this has happened to. And it was interesting because I don't know if you saw, Mike, on Ariel Helwani's Twitter, he had a GIF of CM Punk from the famous pipe bomb promo. And then the only thing is, though, I think he probably would have been taken a little bit more seriously. I think as part of a joke with he and Dan Le Batard, he was wearing a luchador mask. And he gave this entire interview wearing the luchador mask. And I'm not saying that luchadors are schmucks, but he looked like a schmuck. He's not a luchador. Like, it just looked strange.
Was he trying to hide his identity?
It came off like either he was trying to hide his identity or he had been taken hostage by Rey Mysterio and Conan. It was just very, very strange. And La Parca.
Interesting. Okay. I heard it. I didn't see it. So I didn't see the actual video of it. There's a couple things to unwrap here.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned it, Sherdog, which was for a long time one of the leaders of MMA coverage going back 15 years at this point.
Yeah.
And Dana White's distaste for certain journalists. Look, this is an issue. You don't have, at least not to my knowledge, I mean, journalists that cover the National Football League, Major League Baseball, so on and so forth, getting blackballed by leagues.
Yeah.
You know, maybe teams, and they're less likely to speak to somebody because, you know, they don't want a story to get out. But this is a problem. You know, there's a freedom of press. Dana White, who walks around with an orange Oompa Loompa looking dick, you know, talks about that all the time. So for him to go ahead and then ban a guy and censor the media surrounding the UFC is a major problem.
Absolutely. And look, it's another example of how Dana White has so much power over the industry, over the UFC. I mean, the fact that the management has so much power, talk about fighter pay and all of those issues. And then, yeah, that they're literally banning journalists for doing their job.
It's nothing more, nothing less. Ariel Helwani did what he was supposed to do. If he had verified sources, which he obviously did,
yeah,
you're allowed to go with that. You're allowed to go with that news. And if that pissed Dana White off, well, you know what, man? You go break your own news first. It is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's eliminating or it is discouraging honest actors in the field. And, you know, I think it is a positive to have. It's a positive to have critical journalism in any walk of life. I mean, that's why, you know, we talk so often about the work of Karim Zidane and, you know, the different geopolitical aspects of mixed martial arts and the UFC's behavior. You need to have that. You need to have an open and honest conversation. You need to have both and hear from both sides. So it's unfortunate. And, you know, I think that sort of is why the ESPN, who also is sort of facing their own financial issues, gave Ariel Helwani sort of a very somewhat unattractive offer, it appears like. And that's why Ariel Helwani, amongst other, he's now doing several things, but amongst them, he went back to MMA fighting.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. It's going to keep something worth keeping an eye on to see what happens moving forward. It's one of the issues with the UFC, the way they treat the media, the way they treat fighters that I have an issue with. We can further discuss that down the line. Before we talk some boxing, Nick Diaz is officially back, baby.
Very excited. So Nick Diaz will be coming back. He's the co-main event of UFC 266 in September. It is a rematch 17 years in the making against Robbie Lawler. Their first fight was at UFC 47. That's crazy. I'm feeling old.
Yeah, I mean, wow. Hey, you got to book a return fight. You always book a return fight. This is going to be an interesting one as far as let's see what these two guys have. You know, Robbie Lawler, it's a name for us. What's going to happen here, right? This is kind of interesting.
Yeah, look, Robbie is obviously now sort of on the downswing of his career, has been in so many different wars. Nick Diaz has not fought since UFC 183 against Anderson Silva. And that one afterwards, he tested positive for marijuana. And at the time, the Nevada State Athletic Commission gave him a lifetime ban for smoking pot, which now it shows you the development and the treatment of marijuana. Now it's completely legal.
It's so dumb. It's illegal unless you're in the Olympics where, you know, you get high and you go run a 400 meter, the fastest that you've ever ran it before.
Yeah.
And I'm not a I'm not a marijuana guy.
Yeah. You know,
from the aspect of I smoked it once. Right. And I came over your house after I did it. I didn't quite, you know, it is what it is. But to me, from a medical aspect, there are issues that I have where I'm like, yeah, this might help. Where my doctors even said this might help. For people to be banned for it is so stupid. It's so dumb. Thank God they reverted back on, you know, from that. Unless, not retroactively, unfortunately.
Yeah. Plus, we could probably, and first of all, there are people far more qualified than you and I to discuss all the benefits of marijuana from a medicinal standpoint. But also, if you think about
the invitation is there for Joe Rogan to come on this program.
or we could go out to Austin and hang out with him as well. I guess.
Yeah.
Smoke
a little dupe. Yeah, absolutely.
But the point is, I mean, if you think about all of the other substances and supplements that are made available to athletes, I think some of those almost have better or more tangible benefits for athletes as compared with marijuana. I just, you know, it's a ridiculous situation. But going back to Diaz and Lawler, it's just interesting because Diaz has not fought since UFC 183. You know, a few years ago when he was talking about his brother and his career. He seemed as if he was sort of struggling with some other sort of demons, particularly with alcohol. But lately, he looks in great shape. We talked about that, I think, a few months ago. I mean, he's a dedicated triathlete. Just very like Nick Diaz, even frankly more so than Nate Diaz to me. Nick Diaz fights are some of the most entertaining fights you'll ever see. So I'm just super excited he's back in the UFC. This is, and I as much as I love Robbie Lawler, I would love to see a Nick Diaz win and see where this can go.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the Nick Diaz returns from to the microphone too, and how he kind of brings back, you know, the Nick Diaz shtick, specifically to Robbie Lawler. You know, how are they going to tie it back to 17 years? It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that.
Let's talk a little bit of boxing real quick. News came out. It's been bandied about. It's official. Tyson Fury, Dante Wilder postponed due to COVID in Tyson Fury's camp, including Tyson Fury himself. I'm not telling people what to do with their own body. Quite frankly, if you don't want to get the COVID shot, I really don't give a shit. That's your decision. I got it because I wanted to get it. I wanted to protect myself. I wanted to protect those around me. That's the gist of my little talk. I wanted to be able to go out and not have to worry about this kind of horse shit. This is amazing. Like, what the, you know, it's big money fight postponed now. Was scheduled for 7/24 in a couple weeks in Allegiant Stadium. Now, not so much.
Yeah, look, you know, it seems like every week, whether, you know, here or on our other show, The Goal Line Stand, we're talking about people and their willingness to take the vaccine. It's frustrating. Look, I hope everyone in Tyson Fury's camp is okay. I think the reports are generally positive in that regard. Yeah, so I guess now, and that just delays everything else because that delays the Wilder fight. And it delays, I guess, whomever wins the fight, Anthony Joshua. It's stupid. It didn't need to happen, but nevertheless, it did.
And yeah, everyone's going to, anyone who's anti-shot is going to, well, he's okay. Well, yeah, I mean, chances are most of the time you will be, but go tell Khabib that you're going to be okay.
Yeah,
I think he might have exactly. something else to say about it. Let's talk about fights that are happening, hopefully, fingers crossed. Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley, booked for August 29th in the fighting city of Cleveland, Ohio, baby.
Yeah, hey, look, that's Stipe Miocic's hometown, more so than I view it as Jake and Logan Paul's hometown. But that's obviously the reason for Cleveland, because Jake and Logan are from that general area. I'm a little... miffed at why they went Sunday night again as opposed to Saturday night.
This is interesting that they're going, this is the second consecutive Sunday night. I wonder if there is some kind of, from a scientific standpoint of buying and what's going on, reasoning behind it. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Sunday night is traditionally a professional wrestling night.
Yeah, it's not the boxing night.
Right, from a pay-per-view aspect. It's not the combat sports night. So, yeah, good question. I don't know. I mean, we could ask the hired gun. He might have some insights to it from his past, at least people that he can ask.
Sure. I will reach out to him, and I will let you know if I get an answer. So either way, I'm hoping Tyron Woodley trains.
And Sunday night, you know, it's not even like that is – my initial thought was, okay, well, maybe that's going to be – that's Labor Day weekend, but I don't believe. Oh no, it is. All right.
No, isn't it the weekend before Labor Day?
So it is going into. No, so that's Labor Day weekend. So that's the 29th. Labor Day this year is. Oh yeah, correct. Sorry, yeah, it's the weekend before.
Yeah,
I can't read it. I can't read a calendar app.
It's okay.
So yeah, so it makes no sense. No sense whatsoever.
I don't know what. Yeah,
why it's on Sunday night. It makes no sense why it's in freaking Cleveland. Where is it? Is it at the Gund Arena?
Yeah, it's at the home of the. I don't. By the way, I don't think they fight at the Gund Arena. It's no longer the Gund Arena, buddy.
It's always going to be the Gund Arena to me. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Interesting thing coming.
Why
out
don't
of
they
it.
Just play at the Richfield Coliseum then?
I don't think it's there anymore. I think
or not play fight. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Interesting thing coming out of this. There's a press conference. Tyron Woodley and Jake Paul had a nice little exchange. Allegedly, let's see what happens. If Tyrone Woodley wins, Jake Paul will get a tattoo that says, I love Tyrone Woodley. And if Jake Paul wins, Tyrone Woodley will get a tattoo that says, I love Jake Paul. They will have to post it on Instagram.
Guess what? If either of them decided to pay me the amount of money that they're getting paid to fight, I'll get it without having to fight.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? You bring up the money, and I'm actually starting to side with Jake Paul on his crusade against Dana White and the MMA establishment as pertains to fighting dollars. And I think some of this has to do with the GSP saga that's kind of going on in the background as well. But the guy is starting to win me over here. I don't know.
I appreciate his stance with respect to particularly UFC fighter pay. I think it offsets some of his douchiness, but I don't think it does not completely remove himself from the douchebag category.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have some sad news to discuss before we kind of preview some stuff. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff passed away at age, I believe, 71.
Yeah,
earlier in the week. And Mr. Wonderful was not doing very well. There was pictures that were circulating. I believe he had some form of cancer. But it was really amazing to see him deteriorate from what he was, obviously, in the heyday. And thinking about it, I wasn't the biggest Mr. Wonderful guy. Kind of came a little bit before, I think, before my fandom in wrestling started. But, man, he was really such – without Mr. Wonderful, there is no Hulkamania the way we know it, and therefore there is no professional wrestling ascending the way it did in the 1980s.
Yeah, absolutely. First, as you said, condolences to his family. Paul Orndorff was an integral part of the rise of Hulkamania. His – feud with Hulk was incredibly important and also led to one of the biggest gates in the history of professional wrestling and the big event.
A house show.
Yeah.
People don't realize this. The big event, 70,000 people in Toronto for a house show.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, it goes on Coliseum Home Video, but that wasn't a pay-per-view. That was an event.
Yeah.
Yeah, without that, Mr. Wonderful, and obviously WrestleMania 1, you don't have what you have. And there was a lot of people that said, and I think this happens when someone passes in sports in general, oh, man, they deserved a run. Mr. Wonderful didn't hold the WWE Championship, WWF Championship. I don't know that he necessarily did, but his role should – absolutely, this would be an opportune time for the WWE Network to put something together explaining to the younger fan base who he really was, because they're going to see the graphic, rest in peace, Mr. Wonderful, and to them it's just a dude. But his part of the history of the WWF and the WrestleMania era is so huge and really shouldn't be overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, you know, he had a very good run in the territories prior to his arrival in the WWF. So that's something that shouldn't be overlooked as well. I believe he held several different territorial championships, particularly in the Southeast. He was very big there.
Yeah, he was big in Mid-South, Florida. He was a Tampa.
Georgia
as well.
Yeah.
He kind of came up that traditional, let's call it the NWA route, you know, that
yeah.
Ultimately became what everyone thinks of as the NWA, Dusty Rhodes, that kind of thing. And he had a little bit of a run in WCW, and then he ultimately came back to the WWF, and it wasn't – obviously, he had that injury where the arm atrophied, and
yeah.
it was weird.
No, it definitely wasn't. But I think, you know, the other thing to talk about with Paul Orndorff was, you know – he was legendary in terms of his toughness. And this is a guy who, you know, the reports are he beat up Big Van Vader. So considering Vader had what, 200 plus pounds on him. And this is at the time, as you mentioned, with the atrophied arm, and he supposedly beat the shit out of him quickly.
Yeah. That is
while wearing bath shoes.
Yes. Yes. That is the famous story that in bath slippers with an atrophied arm, he beat the living hell out of Vader.
Yeah.
So, I didn't realize that Paul Orndorff's run in pro wrestling, mainstream pro wrestling, ended in 2001. I had forgotten that he was with WCW in WCW's dying days.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of names that kind of went through there towards the end that, you know, and you're just trying to actively forget it because it was pretty ugly. I mean, Barry Windham, and it was a kind of a crappy moment for a lot of tremendous wrestlers.
So rest in peace, Mr. Wonderful. Thoughts and prayers go out to his family, his friends, and his fans. It's definitely sad to see that happen. And look, we're thinking of all of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sticking with professional wrestling real quick, it is a momentous week ahead and a momentous week that was. AEW took to the road. Road Rager in Miami, Florida. They had a huge night. You're listening to this. AEW Dynamite will be on TV in the United States, at least, after our show. Friday night SmackDown is going to be live in front of a live audience for the first time in 16 months. We are bidding farewell to WWE's Thunderdome. The Thunderdome, I got to tell you, at first glance, it was absolutely what needed to happen. I give WWE all the credit in the world for getting creative to come up with the idea of the Thunderdome. And I don't know where it started, whether they were the first, where everybody was kind of simultaneous. Basketball ended up doing it with the video boards. A lot of other sports did the same thing. It brought a certain element of, I don't want to call it normal, but like, okay, there's people there. I can see that the wrestlers are working towards these people that are on these video boards. It really, really, at the time, early on, brought a little bit of sense of normalcy to WWE programming. But there's always a but. It stayed on about 8 months too long, Brett. 8 months too long with the Thunderdome. This should have died a long time ago. Once AEW figured out how to bring in 500 fans to Daly's Place, WWE had the opportunity to do something similar, and they didn't do it.
Well, I think that Vince McMahon is an incredibly stubborn guy and wouldn't want to, A, look like he's following in AEW's footsteps, and B, he's a size guy, right? Size matter. And unlike NXT, I don't think he could bear or stomach watching Raw or having Raw or SmackDown with the studio element anymore. So at least Thunderdome gave it that typical, like it was, you were still in an arena. So to him, I think Vince McMahon, it was, if I can't do it in an arena, I'm not doing it at all.
One of the things I think that is cool about the Thunderdome that hopefully it's really going to bring back once they hit the road, we're going to find out, pyro. And they brought back a little bit more of the set element to everything. It used to be fun when you would have different sets for different things, and it became super generic. So let's see if it grows from there. Other good things that come out of the Thunderdome era of the WWE. Can anything come off the top of your head?
No.
No, exactly. Other than Roman Reigns. Other than Roman Reigns, I got nothing. I got nothing.
There's like no memorable moments.
There are none. There are zero memorable moments. Roman Reigns, the angle, the head of the table angle, the story, that to me is probably it.
They're going to ruin that too.
Let's see. There's rumor and innuendo going around that he's got a big match against Big Match John coming up at SummerSlam. We'll see.
That's not the payoff,
but they're building to the payoff. Rumor is they're building to the payoff. If you smell what I am cooking, we'll follow up later on with that. Rest in peace, Thunderdome. I don't ever want to see you again. Goodbye. Farewell. Good night. I'm interested in seeing what happens when WWE gets back in front of a paying audience and how they react to the program.
Yeah. Hopefully it will inspire them to, you know, stop producing crap.
It's going to be super. Look, SmackDown's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
What happens? What happens? All this stuff that you've been force feeding the fans because you could, with the Thunderdome audience, you can make whatever reaction you wanted. What happens now when you're in front of a live audience? They're coming to Philadelphia. They're going to New York for SmackDown. Both shows are going to be SmackDown shows live on Fox. We know how this works when you get in front of those fans. People tend to get angry. People tend to do stupid shit. They will throw things in the ring. They will try to pick up a whole row of chairs and throw it at the Big Show when they don't like what they see. So what happens when fans in these cities don't like what the WWE is trying to force feed you? It's going to be interesting.
You're going to have a lot of AEW chance.
You are going to have a lot of AEW chance. A lot of AEW shirts. It's going to be interesting. It is going to be interesting. Hey, let's preview Bellator 262 coming up. What do we got on tap for that?
Well, I will say, admittedly, not the deepest card.
In Nerf Thunder, though, by the way.
Yes. Well, no. It's
bringing people back?
Yeah. It's in the arena now, but it's still limited. So they're in the limited universe.
That's fine.
Yeah. So the main event is Juliana Velasquez against Denise Kielholz for the Women's Flyweight Championship. Frankly, I think it should be an easy night for Velasquez, the champion, who's defending her belt for the first time after defeating Alima Leigh McFarlane, which will then probably set up a match between her and Liz Carmouche, which should be a very good. That fight I'm very much looking forward to.
Matt Mitrione is on the co-main event, still hanging around, former New York Giant.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, because I barely remember him as a New York Giant. He was there for like 1 year, good old Matt Mitrione, meathead, as Rashad Evans would call him. He's in the co-main event against Tyrell Fortune. You know, Mitrione is a guy who I think the talent never quite actualized into the results that a lot of people were anticipating. You know, an incredibly athletic guy, just could never quite put it together, never developed sufficient ground skills. And now the problem is, because he was a guy who just liked to stand and bang, now his chin is starting to fade. That's a very bad combination. He might be able to get past Tyrell Fortune, but in terms of long-term success, I think it's limited in that capacity because of the now fading chin.
We also have UFC on ESPN. UFC Vegas numbers, what is this, 38?
Well, that's the problem. Because so this one is actually on regular ESPN in America. Right. So I know it's UFC on ESPN 26, but does that mean they count it as a UFC Vegas?
I think so.
Then I think it would be UFC Vegas 31.
Oh, really?
And shouldn't it just be UFC? All of these are UFC fight nights.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the easiest way to go about it. But maybe Spike has the or Paramount has the copyright on it. What do we got coming up in the main event?
So main event is Islam Makhachev versus Thiago Moises in a lightweight match. These are two up-and-coming guys. Makhachev, I believe, is ranked 11th. Thiago Moises is ranked 14th. I will tell you, Islam Makhachev right now could easily fight for the lightweight championship. So he is one of Khabib Nurmagomedov's closest training partners, aside from Khabib's cousins and younger brother. He is talented, very much in the same ilk as Khabib. You know, Daniel Cormier raves about him, and he cannot get a fight. No one who is ranked ahead of him wants to fight him because it's, what are you getting out of it, right? Because if you win, you've defeated a Khabib-like monster, but you're not going to get the credit because he's not ranked ahead of you. So this guy, you know, to me, I think easily within a year, this guy's fighting for the UFC lightweight championship. It would be a great storyline if somehow Connor, I don't think Connor is the UFC lightweight champion in a year, but you sort of renew the Khabib rivalry in that sense. He is so talented, though, on the ground. And every time you see him, his striking is improving. So it is pretty scary. Thiago Moises himself is very talented, and credit him for taking this matchup. To me, though, Makhachev is just a steamroller, and I predict him to win, whether via stoppage or dominant decision. He's just that good.
In the co-main event, we have the return of Misha Tate. Should this be the main event? Would it have been smart to book this as the main event from a fan standpoint?
So from a fan standpoint, yes. The reason it is not. So initially this was going to be the main event. I forget who initially was supposed to be in this main event, but then both fighters actually pulled out, and this is why they booked Islam Makhachev versus Thiago Moises. Misha Tate had, since she has not fought since UFC 205, she wanted her first fight back to be a three-rounder. So that's why it's not a main event. But either way, it's very cool, you know, her against Marion Renault. This is Marion Renault's retirement fight. She's been a very, you know, she's someone who never quite cracked the top five in the division, but a very entertaining fighter. And also, very cool story. She's a teacher, right? You know, it just has represented herself very well in the sport. So credit to her for her career. As most of our listeners will know, Misha Tate is my favorite female fighter. Absolutely love her. She's incredibly talented, former UFC bantamweight champion, former Strikeforce bantamweight champion. I'm very much looking forward to seeing her evolution, how she looks after, you know, several years away. Her training pictures, she looks amazing in training.
She looks like ripped. Physically jacked.
Yeah.
Like in a good way. Like,
yeah.
Unbelievable. It's going to be interesting to see.
No, absolutely. She used to have to cut a good amount of weight right before the fight. And that's in UFC 200, which was that crazy card where John Jones, Daniel Cormier fell through 3 days before. Then Anderson Silva stepped up. You had Brock Lesnar. The main event in that card was Misha Tate against Amanda Nunes, and that's when Amanda Nunes won. Misha Tate weighed in the last second and barely made weight. And so, you know, she claims, you know, she had a lot of personal things going on in her life that were really getting in the way of training. She's in a much different place. She has a beautiful family now. You know, mazel tov to her and her family. She recently got engaged. So, you know, it's interesting to see that she have one more run. And my thing that I would love, if she wins, gets on the mic and call out her longtime rival, Miss Ronda Rousey.
Got to sell pay-per-views, right? I mean,
yeah.
Why not do it? Well, Ronda Rousey, they had the kid, right? Or they're close to having the child.
They're close to having the child. Look, the only thing is Ronda beat her twice. So it really wouldn't make sense. But if I'm Misha Tate, Misha's very good on the mic. She's very eloquent. I would just keep, you know, if she could string together a few wins, A, she might end up fighting for a title, but I would actually call it Ronda Rousey.
One other fight in 30 seconds that you're looking forward to on this card.
I am looking forward to Phil Hawes versus Deron Winn at middleweight. I'm actually very surprised this is on the prelims. Deron Winn is a training partner of Daniel Cormier. Phil Hawes recently defeated Philadelphia's own Kyle Dacos. Incredibly explosive. See how he deals with a smothering wrestler. Very interesting fight.
Brett's picks will be out on all of our social media at ITF Show. That's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and also on InTheFight.net, where you can find some of our quirky stuff, or a little bit of our blog as it pertains to the world of MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing. Sportinarium Radio, Sportinarium.com, at SportinariumWW on Twitter and Instagram. Big things going on in the world of Sportinarium Radio. We are happy to be a part of them, such as the Goal Line Stand, coming September 3rd. Michael's Glass Company, serving the Philadelphia tri-state area since 1978. 215-338-3293. Tell them that we sent you. DePaul's Table, 7 East Lancaster Avenue in the heart of Ardmore, a modern Italian steakhouse. TKO Store, TEEKOstore.com. Buy some shirts. Links to this will be in the show notes. Enjoy the fights and stay safe.